Welcome to All Rise, the Gonzaga Law Podcast. I'm Ryan McNeese. On today's episode, we welcome 2019 graduate Emily Hazen. Hazen is an advocate on behalf of our country's veterans, particularly those who have been affected by military sexual trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, and traumatic brain injury. Hazen recently sat down with Kim Pearson, Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and Program Innovation. For more information about this podcast and our guests, please visit gonzaga.edu/law/podcast.
Hi, listeners. My name is Kim Pearson. I'm a law professor and the Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and Program Innovation. My research and writing is focused on disfavored population outcomes in courts at the intersection of law and social norms. For this episode, I'm interviewing one of our graduates who has extraordinary grit, resilience, and a passion for serving vulnerable populations. Emily Hazen will be graduating with a JD in a few days. She already has an MBA. Emily is a Thomas More Scholar, which means she was awarded a full tuition scholarship for law school based on her academic and public service record. She also served as the Gonzaga Law Review articles editor and was recognized for her outstanding research and writing as the winner of the 2019 YCC Fanner J. Eder Prize in Comparative Law. So Emily, welcome, and thank you so much for coming to chat with me. I noticed that in a recent feature you stated that, quote, military sexual trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, and traumatic brain injury are invisible illnesses that have visible repercussions for veterans, including substance abuse, suicidal ideation, incarcerations, and homelessness. I feel like you've accurately captured a growing problem that's based on our society's inability to adequately address the effects of armed conflict. And I also think it's fair to say that our listeners are familiar with the long history of various failures by the U.S. government and our society to adequately support veterans after war and armed conflicts. Now, some would say that this awareness about the physiological and mental challenges is improving to some degree. How do you think increased awareness about the challenges that many veterans face will be useful going forward?
Increased awareness will allow society to better understand the issue. And I think that's the main problem with the current VA system is the whole process from sitting in a crowded room to getting in your car to like signing up for these benefits can substantially increase the triggers for PTSD and military sexual trauma. And to better understand this issue will allow caregivers and social workers to connect with these veterans and meet them where they are and really provide them the care that they need.
So can you tell us a little bit more about what some of these triggers look like? You said walking into a crowded room and having to sort of be in these, I think, busy public spaces.
Yes. So for military sexual trauma, for example, it's up to the victim and the advocate to put together the package to get connected to like mental health and GI benefits and all these resources that are available to veterans. But it's up to the veteran to put together the packet and bring it forward, which is significantly challenging for the veteran and also brings up a lot of memories of the trauma. And resources are improving to fix that. So now you can just call in instead of the veteran having to go into, you know, the commander's office and be like, hey, can I get my report? They have telehealth now where she can call in and get mental health counseling over the phone. And resources are improving, but the whole process is incredibly triggering for veterans. I did not nail that answer.
You know, I don't think it's that sort of conversation.
Okay.
And I hope you feel comfortable enough to just sort of walk through this like we're chatting over coffee or something.
Okay.
Because this is the kind of conversation that I think our listeners are very interested in hearing about.
Okay.
Because when you read something in, say, like a news article or whatever, it can feel very distant.
Yeah.
Whereas for somebody like me, I have no military background. Most of my experience is looking at a lot of data and thinking about court outcomes. So it's great to hear from you and to really just sort of humanize this for me and for a lot of our listeners who don't have a military background. So I really appreciate you coming to do this. So sort of getting back to thinking about these public spaces and the kinds of resources available for veterans, are there things that our society in general can do to improve the experience for our veterans?
Yeah, I think just knowing the resources and also knowing the triggers and knowing the whole process. So under the Obama administration, then Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel really revamped the whole system of proving PTSD and military sexual trauma, and he decreased the standard significantly. But prior to that, a lot of veterans that came forward trying to prove these claims were denied because they couldn't prove it. They couldn't show military sexual trauma. You know, sexual assault is incredibly hard to prove, which I'm sure everyone is aware. But Obama was like, demanded the military step up the game exponentially in providing care for veterans, and so they did. But a lot of advocates don't know that like they have a decreased standard, so you can have these markers. So, for example, going from like a 3.8 GPA at the Air Force Academy to a 2.7 could be a marker to show, hey, like this female cadet was sexually assaulted. You don't have to have hard proof. You just have to have substantial evidence that something happened that traumatically changed your trajectory.
Oh, that's fantastic. But I also feel like there are some pieces that might be missing for some of our listeners. And certainly, even the kind of experience that I have in research and writing about sexual assault in marital settings, in different relationship sort of formulations, these are all civilian settings. And I feel like there's something substantially different when these kinds of assaults happen in military settings. Some of the things that you've sort of touched on seem to imply that the burden is on the person who was assaulted rather than on the person who's been accused of the assault. And so this seems like a real problem. Added on to that, I think are layers of hierarchy. There are certainly systems in place that probably serve to silence people and to discourage them from self-reporting and these other things. So it's good to hear that at least politically we have some recourse and people can get more awareness. How do you think people on an individual level can help?
I just think you have to meet, that's a hard question because no trauma is the same. So I can't answer how one person can help a specific veteran, but I just think being aware and, you know, trauma manifests itself in so many ways. And I just think you have to meet the veteran where they're at and look at them holistically rather than just as, oh, you have a traumatic brain injury. Mm-hmm. Here's how to fix it. It's like, no, like this person, like this traumatic brain injury changed this person's entire trajectory. Like meet them where they are and like provide support from there.
So one of the big trends for treating children who've suffered abuse, neglect, and other forms of assault is to do what's called trauma-informed care. What could that look like for somebody with, say, a JD, MBA going out to practice? How would you incorporate trauma-informed care? And I know that's a really hard question. I didn't mean to throw you off guard. It's just that I don't know if you've read this book. It's called The Body Keeps Score. Does this sound familiar to you?
Yes.
I love that book. And somebody just introduced it to me a couple of years ago, but it really changed the way that I think about child custody disputes and intimate partner violence and domestic abuse against children. But I think this same kind of mindset can also be it's portable, right?
Yes,
it can
yes.
be transferred to the way that we care about our veterans. It can be transported to the way we care about our colleagues in other educational settings. So you've been at Gonzaga for 3 years.
Yes.
And you've contributed so much. Do you feel like there was any kind of difference in the approach you from the education you received here? Because I know we talk a lot about having a holistic approach, trying to educate the whole person. What did it end up looking like for you?
So it's interesting. The Body Keeps the Score, going back to that book, that guy was invented EMDR trauma therapy, which, based on my research of studying trauma therapy, EMDR, in my own experience, EMDR is amazing. So anyone out there who knows someone going through a trauma, EMDR is a good one to look into.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about EMDR?
Yeah, so EMDR, I don't know what it stands for. It's like rapid eye movement recovery. That's not right, but it's something about your eye movement. So you hold like two different vibrations in your right and left hand, and your therapist is sitting there, and he or she is asking you questions about your trauma, and you can either speak it out loud or you can just keep it to yourself, but you go through the feelings of the trauma, like in present tense, while these like vibrators in your hand like are vibrating. And something about
isn't there also like a flashing light?
That's another one. So another one is a flashing light.
So it's like resetting your memory so that you're not constantly experiencing a past trauma in the present tense.
Yes.
And so once you get that reset, then you can safely categorize it as a past event and help your body move forward.
Yes, correct. And what it does is it really like solidifies like the lines. I'm not a neuroscientist, so I don't know if this is right, but like the pathways in your mind that like remember trauma, it like really solidifies them, so you're no longer flooded when you think about it. And it's quick. It took me 6 months.
That is fast.
Yeah, and I'm not kidding. It like totally healed me from it. Not totally, but it was substantial in healing trauma.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah. It was helpful for you. I heard a little bit about it, but it's great to hear that there are those kinds of resources available, because we're finding out more and more all the time about these really deep connections between things we experience and the way in which our mind works and holds on to things. And I think it can be incredibly liberating to move past a trauma and be able to go forward.
Yes. No, definitely. So Gonzaga really helped me rediscover my own strength, I think, because of the trauma-informed care. I'm leaving law school a totally different person than I was when I entered it. I think a lot of it is because of the Thomas More program. I just got so much support. So about a year before I entered law school, I went to Washington, D.C. to meet with my attorney, Susan Burke, and the New York Times was going to meet me there because they wanted to hear my story. And 5 minutes before I was supposed to meet with the reporter, I decided not to go through with it, and my attorney told me, Emily, you may not have your voice now, but one day you'll get your voice back. And so last year, thanks to Gonzaga, I finally got my voice back, and I shared my story. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think it is because Gonzaga gave me the support and confidence that I needed to get there, and also EMDR.
That's wonderful. Yeah. I'm so glad to hear that you've been able to really tap into the kind of resilience that you need to keep moving forward. And like I said, you've shared so much with our community. I feel like you're a true role model, and you're just such an asset for our community. So I know we've already talked about this to some degree, thinking about advocacy going forward. Do you have some fun plans to...
Yeah, this was the question I was waiting for.
Oh, good! Because I know you're graduating in a few days. This is so exciting for you.
I will nail this question.
Okay, you go.
So right now, the VA does not cover eating disorder treatment, especially for victims of military sexual trauma. But a study was done a couple years ago that surveyed everyone getting help for eating disorders, and the biggest issue was military sexual trauma. And so right now, all these veterans with experience in military sexual trauma don't get the treatment they need. And so my big thing would be to research from a public policy perspective, the costs associated with like these lifelong habits of having an eating disorder and how much it costs the VA medically towards the end, rather than just offering preventative care and getting the eating disorder where they're at with therapy. So it largely manifests itself in binge eating disorder, which becomes obesity, which has, you know, substantial medical complications. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be my big project.
Wow, that's impressive and exciting. Do you think that you'll then have opportunities to continue doing advocacy work?
Yeah, I think so. I just care so much about veterans, and they go through so much, and they're so misunderstood, and they just need support and compassion and empathy.
So if you could say win the lottery, what would you do with your winnings?
I would donate a lot of money to the Military Justice Improvement Act. Open up a clinic for military sexual trauma and eating disorders.
So for a lot of young people who find the military a very tempting option, especially young women, what would you have to say to them going forward?
Oh, gosh.
Is that... That's a tricky question, isn't it?
Yeah. Because initially I would never encourage a woman to enter the military. Unfortunately, I'm not going to pretend like was a good experience or that it's gotten any better. However, I know a lot of women who have had fabulous experiences and have loved every second of it. And so I think if it's something you're informed about and it's something you really want to do, then go for it. But also, like, know what you're getting into.
So there might be some people who would say that for women in the military, it's not just your workplace, but it's also where you live. And so movements that are outside of the military, like the Me Too movement, that was really about sexual harassment and assault in the workplace, can help to some degree. But if you're living it, and it's not just in sort of this cabined off space in your life, it seems like it could be very intense. Are there any other alternatives aside from leaving the military if something happens to you? And there aren't ways to, say, effectively deal with someone who continues beyond, say, a specific incident and rolls into like stalking and other forms of harassment that might not rise to the level where like military justice can touch them.
Right. So the military has about three avenues to handle that. An Article 15 or administrative or criminal. Unfortunately, if the victim was sitting in front of me, I would tell her not to do any of those.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, because she's a liar until she's not.
So it's not innocent for the victim. The victim has to demonstrate the entire time that
the victim has to demonstrate
he or she is not lying.
That, yes, and also the perpetrator is more than likely in her chain of command or within her squadron, which means the overseeing officer knows both. But the military, if the military was sitting here, they would tell you there are other avenues, like she can transfer bases. But if you're married with a family and your kids are in school, what are you going to do? Move your entire family? It's not as black and white as the current policies like to make it. Yeah.
That sounds really difficult. And it sounds like this is sort of circling back to what we talked about at the beginning, where not only being in that public space, but having the burden of proof, having to go through all of these bureaucratic hoops in order to have people listen to you and believe you and give you aid, that just seems egregious. It seems really, really problematic.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to change it. The Military Justice Improvement Act is really trying to change the whole process by allowing prosecutors to have the discretion that they do in the civilian justice system, which is, I think, an integral part to ever having a fair system.
So do you think it will help having more women rising in the ranks and taking on positions within the JAG Corps?
I don't think so. I don't think so because it's still a boys' club. It's still the prosecutor, she still has her hands tied. She still has to go to the commander, who's likely a male, and ask to, like, even call an expert witness. She has to get this. So her hands are still tied the same way as a male counterpart. And you would hope that she'd be a bigger advocate and push a little bit harder for her.
Right.
But...
well, I think this is a really important viewpoint, because what you're basically saying is that a lot of the change that needs to take place is structural and maybe external to the military, so that other forces help push it to make the kind of changes that really be there to support our veterans, regardless of gender.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Emily. Just been a delight to talk to you. You're obviously very bright and driven, and it's just such a pleasure and an honor to meet you and get to chat with you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for answering these questions and addressing this very important topic.
Oh, I think we're all very grateful that you're here. So I'll just go ahead and close us out and wish you the very best of luck going forward. And I won't be surprised at all to see you changing the world.
Thank you.